Ayam tu deva yajana.
Ayam tu deva yajana.
Indro pendradi bir bhava.
Indro pendradi bir bhava.
Sahabhagam nalabhatam.
Sahabhagam nalabhatam.
Dever deva ganadhama.
I am
that
to
but
deva yajane
in the sacrifice of the demigods indra upendra adibihi with indra upendra and the others bhava shiva
Saha,
along with
bhagam,
a portion.
Na, not.
Labhatam, should obtain. Devai, with the demigods. Devagana adhama, the lowest of all the demigods. Translation. The sage Maitreya continued, "Thus Daksha, seeing Lord Shiva sitting as if against him, washed his hands and mouth and cursed him in the following words. The demigods are eligible to share in the oblations of sacrifice. The Lord Shiva, who is the lowest of all the demigods, should not have a share." Due to this curse, Shiva was deprived of a share in the oblations of Vedic sacrifice.
শিব যজ্ঞভাগ থেকে বঞ্চিত হন।
It is due to the curse of Daksha, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti comments in this connection. The Lord Shiva was saved from the calamity of taking part with other demigods who were all materialistic. Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is not fit for him to eat or sit with materialistic persons like the demigods. Thus, the curse of Daksha was indirectly a blessing. For he would not have to eat or sit with other demigods. Oh, I just read that. There is a practical example set for us by Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He used to sit on the side of a latrine to chant Hare Krishna. Many materialistic persons used to come and bother him and disturb his daily routine of chanting. So to avoid their company, he used to sit by the side of a latrine, where materialistic persons would not go because of the filth and the obnoxious smell. However, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was so great that he was accepted as the spiritual master of such a great personality as His Divine Grace Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Conclusion is that Lord Shiva behaved in his own way to avoid materialistic persons who might disturb him in his prosecution of Krishna consciousness. So we see here an example, practical, of a way in which the materialistic mind is unable to understand or appreciate transcendence.
এখানে আমরা দেখি কিভাবে জড় বিষয়াসক্ত মন আধ্যাত্মবাদ বোঝবার জন্য চেষ্টা করে না.
That there's an idea that the material intelligence can understand transcendence. That would be like saying that a copper wire understands electricity. But it can't understand. It's a piece of metal. By being a piece of copper, it does not have electricity. Right? Only when it is connected to electricity, then the electricity may flow through it. But without that connection, just because it's copper, doesn't mean there's electricity. So the materialistic intelligence is so proud that it thinks it can understand something that it has no connection with. This idea comes from what is termed, in India we would say that this is the Nyayas, those who are following Gautama, that by reason alone you can understand everything. In the West they call themselves rationalists. It's about as intelligent or logical as somebody who has a thermometer for checking temperature. And he says, with this thermometer, I can understand everything. You know, what taste the sabji is, what color is my wife's sari, what particular fragrance is coming in the breeze. But it can only tell hot and cold. So because this example, nobody has attachment to. So it's very obvious to everyone how foolish a position it is. But unfortunately, when we move it into the intellectual field, because of attachment, people become extremely foolish. So because of attachment, people are very convinced by their intelligence they can understand everything. But spiritual life has nothing to do with mundane intelligence. The intelligence, being one of Krishna's energies, can be empowered with the spiritual energy, then one is able to understand. But without that empowerment, one can never understand. And then another platform of foolishness, that one feels that simply by good mundane work, therefore one is also very well situated. But because one feels morality is the highest thing, one considers morality higher than spiritual, or even worse, immorality is spiritual. Just like, what's his name? Daksha. He accepts God, he accepts authority, but he thinks his principled behavior is higher than the transcendental platform. So he's in a better position than most, but it's still not good enough. And that's why Krishna then comes in this manifestation as Lord Shiva. Just so that all the religionists, all the moralists, all the intellectuals, you know, all the empiricists, all of them cannot understand. That they will have their nice, well thought out plan, but when it comes to situations like Lord Shiva, everything falls apart for them. Because all of these people have one thing in common. They take the mundane to be the supreme. None of them understand that copper wire has value because it carries electricity, not that it is electricity. So the form of the Vedic ritual is important because it is the perfect medium to carry the transcendental chit potency. But it itself is not chit. It carries it. Just like the bucket is important because it carries water. But a bucket on its own, what's the purpose? So the perfection of all these Vedic rules and regulations is devotion to Krishna. Right? Absorption in Krishna. So Daksha, being one of these Baltivadis, or the bucket wallas, then he does not see that Vedic form in Shiva's behavior, so he does not he cannot in any way consider that Shiva could be advanced. So he's unable to appreciate what the purpose of the Vedic ritual is already obtained by Lord Shiva. The Lord Shiva is already absorbed perfectly in transcendence, and so all the purposes of the Vedic rituals he has achieved. So therefore Daksha is very disturbed, but Lord Shiva is not, because in this situation people like Daksha, even though they're so pious, so nice, you know, so regulated in all their activities, they're actually unfit to associate with. So this curse actually is very good for Lord Shiva, because now he doesn't have to come to these yajnas and associate with all these mundaners like Daksha and all these other demigods who are just sitting around, you know, checking each other out and their potencies and powers and their wives and, you know, who gets how much of the portion of the sacrifice and all this, you know, mundane, you know, what do you call it? So the purpose of sacrifice is to know the Lord, so he already knows the Lord. So therefore he can sit under his tree and be absorbed in the Lord. Now, there's also another side of this. We are not Lord Shiva. Therefore, the rules and regulations given in the Vedic literatures are there for our upliftment. But their purpose is to know Krishna. No other purpose. So just because one's able to follow the regulations nicely if you're not becoming Krishna conscious, that's missing the point. So the Vedic ritual is to support Krishna consciousness. So the two go together. So the general standard, the acharya, then both are matched. But just to make sure that we understand that the Krishna consciousness aspect is the greater aspect, not the ritual. Therefore, there are examples like Lord Shiva. Any questions or comments?
Kono prashna athava mantabya.
Okay. He's wondering if this example of Lord Shiva, Daksha is an example of Niyamagraha. Yes, you could say. It means he's following all the rules and regulations but not knowing what they're for. Then also Niyamagrahas can also mean someone who gives up these rules and regulations because they don't understand their purpose. But the common principle between both parties, in other words, between the conservatives and the liberals, because that's who we're talking about when we're discussing Niyamagraha, is that both of them are in ignorance. They don't know the purpose of the ritual. The conservative at least accepts authority and tradition, ritual, shastra, but for their own purposes, and miss the point. You can change their focus from being self-centered to actually being God-conscious. They're actually quite well situated. The liberal has a bit more problem. The liberal doesn't accept authority. They have serious authority issues. They don't follow any tradition. They make everything up themselves. It comes purely from their own mind or from their associate's mind. It has nothing to do with the reality of the laws of God. So even if you change their mentality, they become God-conscious, they have absolutely zero cultural background to practice. They have nothing. There's no culture, there's no tradition, there's no authority, there's no acceptance of scriptures. It's all just their mind. So they really have a problem in dealing with, you know, dynamic Krishna consciousness. So even though they'll accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they have no culture. The other ones have culture, they have no Krishna consciousness. So you give them Krishna consciousness, they have both, but they practiced it. But they'll accept the philosophy, but there's no culture. That's more difficult to fill in. So if you keep it simple, just try to connect things nicely to Krishna, it doesn't matter if you have no culture. But if one's very proud of one's sophistication, then one's going to have a lot of problem because one won't be able to just simply connect everything to Krishna. So this empiricist that we're discussing, for them, the feeling, the emotion, is everything. So it's not a matter of intelligence. So they have a lot of trouble with buddhi yoga, which is based on engaging the intelligence in Krishna's service. So the point is if you can all kind of feel the same, then they feel everything's perfect. And they're unscrupulous because they don't care how they got to that feeling. So it's a very, very dangerous aspect. Only emphasizing that because that's actually the leaning of the present day culture. Go back some hundreds of years, we would emphasize the other side because that was the prominence of the culture. It's just ritual without understanding what it's for. But the modern day philosophy of life is extremely dangerous for Krishna consciousness because its basis is in atheism. If you check, your rationalists and empiricists were all atheists. So whatever devotees speak today of liberal thought, it is based in the atheism of the 1700s. Compassion is a quality of the Lord. So real compassion has to be given how the Lord says it's to be given. So real compassion is connected with God consciousness. So consideration of the individual, right? That is what Vaishnavas do. That's called self-realization. We don't say group realization. It's self-realization. That means the individual. Right? Does that make sense? So it's self-realization, the individual considered in a group, in a society. So unless one can see both, one's missed the point. If one only thinks institution, then like daksha, he'll miss the point. And if he only thinks individual and doesn't understand, you know, that there is laws that govern everything, then he'll also miss the point. But the people that they'll be missing the point after are not as elevated as daksha. They're guys like Kant, Hume, Nietzsche, Jung, all dogs. Not one of them worth even repeating their name. So take your pick. At least daksha is pious and is in the Bhagavatam. These others, they wouldn't even bother to put him on the bottom of Daksha's shoe. We have a question from West Virginia here. Please forgive me if my question is not appropriate, but I'm curious, hence my question. As Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of the Lord, is his action of sitting near an area with bad smell appropriate? See, here again we're making the mistake of connecting good smell, bad smell, to devotional service. The point is to be Krishna conscious. One sits in a nice place, nice fragrances and that, because in that pleasantness one will relax, the mind is peaceful, situated in goodness, one remembers the Lord. So it's not the nice atmosphere that creates the Krishna consciousness, it just doesn't distract. So the point's not to sit in a nice place, the point is to not be distracted. Right? So the mode of goodness is generally favorable for not being distracted. But if we find that sitting in such a nice place and all kinds of materialistic people come and disturb you, then sitting in a place that has bad smell is how one will not be disturbed. In other words, to put it plainly, materialistic people are worse than sitting next to a toilet. Right? So since the material world's trouble, there's going to be trouble anyway. So better the toilet than materialistic people. Okay, so we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.